Seems True presents the Sophia Teachings with mathematician, astronomer, and author Robert Powell.
To start with, I would like to speak a hymn to Sophia, to call upon Divine Sophia at the beginning of this series of the Sophia Teachings. O mystical eternal silence, breath of the power of the divine, brightness of the everlasting light, pure reflection of the face of God. O mystical rose of the world, blossoming from the heart of heaven, clothed in the radiance of the sun, weaving the web of existence as the bride of the Lamb. O seed of the ineffable source, O bearer of the eternal word, O queen of peace, who prays for us, we hear your call. I first came to Divine Sophia through a meeting many years ago with a woman in Amsterdam. This meeting took place at the beginning of the year 1978. She invited me to Amsterdam to learn about her spiritual teacher, a Russian individual who I never met, but actually, interestingly enough, who had, after leaving Russia, lived in the town where I grew up in England. And so I had come across writings of this individual, became deeply interested in this Russian esotericist, Valentin Tomberg, and in seeking to find out more about him, a correspondence developed with this woman in Amsterdam, Eva Cliteur. And so I went to meet her. It was really a turning point in my life. She was able to communicate much to me as a background to an understanding of the life of Valentin Tomberg. And at the end of our meeting, she gave me a manuscript written in French by this individual, and she said to me, "You are the one to translate this into English." So at this point in time, I was just going off to Switzerland to begin my studies in eurythmy. Eurythmy is a spiritually based form of movement taught by Rudolf Steiner earlier this century, and I was just about to embark on a four-year study of eurythmy. So I received this manuscript and began work on it, and through translating this manuscript from French into English, I went through many experiences that awoke within me a relationship to the Divine Sophia. In the course of these Sophia teachings, I shall go into this in more detail, but I just wanted to say this initially, that this was a spiritual awakening that was an opening of the heart, a learning to think, to feel in a new way, what I would call a multidimensional way, rather than a linear approach to things, such as I had learned previously as a scientist, as a mathematician, as somebody who had come from a scientific background. So the essence of the awakening to Sophia I would describe as an opening of the heart and a learning to feel, to think in a completely new way, to be able to appreciate multi-dimensional aspects of existence, and to find a new relationship to the whole world. I believe we've lost this through our scientific, technological civilization. We've lost this heartfelt relationship to existence. And it's this that we need to find again, and Sophia is the one who can help us to do this. Sophia is the being who can open us, who can breathe into us new life and new warmth, new love, new appreciation for all that is around us. And so in communicating these Sophia teachings, I hope to be able to communicate something of this wonder, this glory, this beauty that we can discover through finding Sophia. Now, when I use the word Sophia, I mean a being. I don't mean an abstract quality such as wisdom. The literal translation of the word Sophia is, of course, wisdom. But in using the word Sophia, I'm referring to a living being, a being who is the divine mother of humanity, a being who cares for every one of us, a being who is deeply concerned about what is taking place in the world at the present time, a being who is now drawing close to humanity at this time of crisis, a being who, through immense love for every human being on this planet, is concerned with finding a way forwards out of the impasse into which we have come. And so this really is the purpose of sharing, of coming together at this time to learn about the Divine Sophia. So from the outset, I'd like to share something which came about through the work on translating this manuscript from French into English, this manuscript which has in the meantime been published under the title Meditations on the Tarot, A Journey into Christian Hermeticism. This work was written anonymously to be published posthumously. Now, why should a work be written anonymously to be published posthumously? The intention of this work is to find a relationship with the author in spiritual dimensions of existence. So as far as the author is concerned, he is not to be thought of as a personality who lived from 1900 to 1973, but as one who is communicating with us as a friend from another dimension of existence, one who has gone on to live in another dimension, and who, from this other dimension, is seeking to help us as a friend with guidance. Through this work, I found this opening of the heart taking place and this relationship to Sophia. So for me, this work has been a book that is more than a book. It is a magical work, one that has helped to open up this feeling for and relationship to Sophia. And so this is a quest. It is something that enables us to begin to discover who we are, what we think, what we feel, what we're able to do on a much deeper level than we can possibly imagine. And in the words of this work, there are basically three primary aspects of our relationship to existence. These are what we could call a mystical relationship to the world, a Gnostic relationship to the world, and a magical relationship to the world. And I'd like to describe these briefly and then go on to illustrate this in relationship to the Divine Sophia by referring to King Solomon, who we could think of as an archetypal seeker of divine wisdom. And so, just briefly to characterize these three relationships to existence, a mystical relationship to existence implies an opening of the heart, a breath of divine love enters in, and we find that our whole feeling life becomes elevated, becomes transformed, that we begin to find a much deeper level of relating to the world, of feeling the world than we can imagine in the normal course of life. So divine mysticism is something that, of course, all the great mystics have spoken of, but this is essential if we want to open to Sophia. We have to take the step from just feeling about things in an ordinary way to expanding our whole feeling life to begin to feel a sense of divine union. This is a first step, the primary step, I would say, in finding a relationship to divine Sophia. And I shall describe in the course of time ways of helping this to come about through prayer, through meditation, through devotional practices which can expand and open our feeling life into a mystical dimension through prayer, through meditation, and through devotional practices. Coming now to a Gnostic aspect, this relates to finding a relationship to the world as a revelation of divine wisdom, that everything we see around us is actually a work of wisdom. Everything has something to communicate to us. Everything, even every little flower, is a work of divine wisdom. And to find a Gnostic relationship to the world means to begin to open our minds to divine wisdom, to receive an inflowing of light, to begin to experience a living power of thought, an elevation of our whole mental abilities, to begin to receive another dimension of existence into ourselves, what we could call a Gnostic experience of the world, one that is a knowing on a deeper level than an abstract level of knowledge, something that is a knowing in a much deeper way than any abstract knowledge can possibly convey to us, a knowing that has a quality of light and a quality of clarity that speaks to us from divine realms. So this is a second aspect, and one that, of course, is familiar to us if we think back through the whole tradition of philosophy. Philosophy means love of Sophia. And the first philosophers, the Greek philosophers, were ones who truly loved Sophia and who opened their minds to divine wisdom. So this Gnostic aspect, gnosis is simply the Greek word for knowledge, really speaks to us of the opening of our minds, just as a mystical aspect has to do with the opening of our hearts. And there is a third level of finding a relationship to the divine Sophia, and that is what we could call a magical aspect, which means the endeavor to align our own will with divine will in service of the good, the true, and the beautiful. So divine magic or sacred magic means that our own will opens to become empowered by divine will. Again, there are ways, practices, which I shall refer to later, which can help us in this enhancement, this opening of the will, to become a will imbued with magic, with higher spiritual power in the what we could call sacred magic. So these three levels of relating to existence, mystical, Gnostic, and magical, are the essence of what was communicated and opened up to me through work on translating this manuscript from French into English. Meditations on the Tarot begins with describing the mystical, Gnostic, and magical paths, which are paths of opening the heart, opening our minds, and aligning our will with divine will. If we are able to embrace all three of these, this means we become whole human beings, whole in our thinking life, in our mental life, whole in our feeling life, and whole in our life of will, in our life of deeds. So in this series of the Sophia teachings, I hope that we will be able to explore this together, to find this exciting, wonderful challenge, this opening up to the Divine Sophia, who really can address us on all three levels, through our minds, through our hearts, and through our will, through what we are able to do in the world. If we choose to do so, we can enter into a relationship with Sophia on all these three levels. So on my own path, if I were to describe what began in doing this translation and this opening up on these different levels of the mind, of the heart, and of the will, I would say that there came to meet me an experience which changed my life. This experience I had also in Amsterdam in 1980, when I went one day to a little chapel in Amsterdam. This chapel came into existence through a series of appearances of the Virgin Mary that took place in Amsterdam, beginning in 1945, continuing through 1959. In these appearances, Mary revealed herself to a woman in Amsterdam under the title of the Lady of All Nations. We could also say the Lady of All Peoples. And through this series of appearances, a chapel was built in Amsterdam to honour the Virgin Mary, to be a monument to her for seekers of her. And having heard about this chapel, actually through translating this manuscript, where the existence of this chapel is referred to, I went to the chapel in Amsterdam and had an experience there through Mary, which led me to want to dedicate my life to the service of Sophia. What I'm pointing to here is that there is, as became clearer and clearer to me in the course of time, a relationship between Mary and Sophia. The Virgin Mary, in a sense, was a very high incarnation and embodiment of the Divine Sophia. This I will come back to later. What I would like to draw attention to now is that there have been, in the course of history, over and over again, revelations of Divine Sophia. Sophia as the mother of humanity, Sophia as the being who helps guide us in the unfolding of evolution, has revealed herself, has given revelations to different peoples of the earth, to different traditions, different religions. Everywhere we can find aspects of Divine Sophia revealed in the major spiritual traditions and in the major religions of the world. Of course, it's impossible to embrace all aspects of Divine Sophia in these Sophia teachings, and so I will focus primarily upon the what we could call the Western Sophia tradition, but I will also refer to aspects of the Sophia traditions in the different major religions, such as Taoism, Buddhism, Hinduism, and in the tradition, of course, of Christianity and Judaism. Sophia has been a guide for humanity from the beginning of time. One of the most dramatic and striking and extraordinary revelations of Sophia we find in the Old Testament in the life of King Solomon. King Solomon, we remember, for the building of the Temple of Solomon, this majestic, glorious temple of humanity that was built around about 1,000 years before Christ. If we think of the Temple of Solomon, we think of one of the most inspiring works of architecture in the whole history of humanity. And as we can learn through the wisdom books of the Old Testament, Solomon was guided and helped in the building of this glorious work through the inspiration of Divine Sophia. So if we look at King Solomon as an archetypal seeker of wisdom, an archetypal seeker of Divine Sophia, I would like to bring out how he was connected with Sophia in a mystical way, in a Gnostic way, and in a magical way. In a magical way, through the building of the temple. In a mystical way, through his profound love and devotion for Divine Sophia. And in a Gnostic way, through the extraordinary illumination and guidance that he received from Divine Sophia. Solomon was the son of King David. Growing up, he was faced with a choice between riches, health, and wisdom, and he chose wisdom. In the words from the Book of Kings, God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure, and breadth of mind like the sand on the seashore, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the peoples of the East and all the wisdom of Egypt, for he was wiser than all others. This profound wisdom of Solomon came about through his relationship with Sophia, which, as we shall see, was a threefold relationship. The mystical relationship of Solomon with Sophia, with divine wisdom, comes to expression in the following words. From the Book of Wisdom, Solomon speaks, "I loved Sophia and sought her out from my youth, and I sought to take her for my bride, and I became enamored of her beauty. When I come into my house, I find rest with her, for converse with her has no bitterness, and to live with her has no pain, but gladness and joy. And in assiduous communing with her is understanding." Here Solomon expresses his profound love, his deep and wonderful feeling for Divine Sophia, so that she was, for him, a bride, one who accompanied him from the other side of existence, from the spiritual realms, as a mystical bride. So clearly, Solomon rejoiced in the glory of God's creation, and he opened his heart to the wisdom of creation, to Sophia. As modern human beings, we can ask, how would this be possible? This is possible through prayer, through meditation, and simply through becoming more and more attentive to the world around us. Every flower, every tree, every mountain, every lake can speak to us of divine Sophia, can speak to us of the love that weaves through the world, which our own hearts can open to, can respond to, that a conversation can begin to develop between us and the world, a conversation on the level of the heart. And this opens the way to a mystical union with divine Sophia, such as Solomon is speaking of. So in this respect, I would say Solomon was one who was gifted with a profound love, a profound appreciation of all that he took in from the world around him. But this capability, this faculty, lies within each and every one of us. Every human being is able to open their hearts to the glory of creation, to the majesty of divine wisdom. We need only think of looking up to the stars in the heavens on a clear night and to see the incredible majesty and beauty of this world of stars, how the stars can begin to shine down upon us, how we can begin to open our hearts to this realm. Mysticism is not something that is confined to a few great mystics. It is our God-given inheritance to appreciate the world through our hearts, to open to everything, and to allow this to begin to speak in a deep and profound way. We are able to open not only our hearts, but also our minds. This is what I would call the Gnostic aspect of a deepened relationship to the world. Through opening to divine knowledge and understanding. In the case of Solomon, he received divine knowledge and understanding from Sophia. In his own words, from the Book of Wisdom, a knowledge of the structure of the world and the operation of the elements, the beginning and end of epochs and their middle course, the alternating solstices and changing seasons, the cycles of the years and the constellations, the nature of living creatures and the behavior of wild beasts, the violent force of winds and human thought, the varieties of plants and the virtues of roots. I learnt it all, hidden or manifest, for I was taught by Sophia, by her, whose skill made all things. In these words of Solomon, we see the possibility of receiving illumination from divine Sophia, of opening our minds, of receiving the light of illumination, the light of wisdom, the light of understanding. This also is a God-given inheritance for every human being. Every human being has the possibility through this opening of the mind to begin to know on a higher level than any level of abstract knowledge, to begin to know and understand the world around us, to penetrate the veil of appearances and to begin to understand that there is a wisdom, a guidance behind all the phenomena of existence. Every scientist is motivated by the impulse, the urge to penetrate through to the deeper laws of existence. And every human being has this potential to be able to penetrate the veil, to find that beyond the veil of appearances, there is an order, a grandeur, a majesty. There are divine laws that order the world around us, even in seemingly unrelated, chaotic events taking place. There is a profound wisdom, even in the movement of the clouds, in the occurrences of the weather, in all the phenomena of nature, is the work of wisdom. And gnosis, divine knowledge, is the opening of the mind to Sophia, to divine wisdom, as we find in the case of King Solomon. Over and above the opening of our minds, the opening of our hearts to divine reality, there is the possibility of serving the divine, of aligning our own will with the higher will. And to illustrate what we can understand from this, let's again look at King Solomon in his work of the building of the temple. We could describe this work as a work of sacred magic, defining magic here as being the alignment of human will with divine will. In the Book of Wisdom, we find a prayer of King Solomon which reveals this mystery of sacred magic. You told me to build a temple on your sacred mountain and an altar in the city which is your dwelling place. A copy of the sacred tabernacle prepared by you from the beginning. With you is Sophia, who is familiar with your works and was present when you created the universe, who is aware of what is acceptable to you and in keeping with your commandments. Send her forth from your holy heaven and from your glorious throne. Bid her come down so that she may labor at my side and I may learn what is pleasing to you. She knows and understands all things. She will guide me prudently in whatever I do, and guard me with her glory. In this prayer of King Solomon, we see how he turned to divine Sophia for the work of the building of the temple, how Sophia poured out her guidance and her blessing so that he was able to draw up the plan for this great work, this great construction. This was to be a manifestation of divine will as a presence, as an inspiring work here on the earth for every human being who entered this temple to have their inner life elevated, to become aware of the mystery of the divine. The Temple of Solomon was a unique, wonderful, majestic work of divine magic as a monument, a testimony to divine wisdom and divine love. The building of the Temple of Solomon we can take as an example of the work of sacred magic. And this is a faculty, a potential that is present for every human being. If we open our hearts and open our minds, we are able to align our will with divine will. And through this, to be able to find a new relationship to the unfolding of life, so that each day can become for us a time of unfolding our own will in accordance with divine will. I'm not saying that each one of us will be called to build a Temple of Solomon, but each one of us has a part to play in the unfolding plan of evolution. So each one of us has the potential to align our will with divine will. This is the work of sacred magic, and this is an aspect of the new revelation of Sophia in our time, that we align ourselves with her, with the unfolding of divine wisdom, in the service of divine love for the fulfillment of the divine plan. Of course, we need to know what the divine plan is, and this means opening up to Sophia, to receiving her light of inspiration, her warmth of her being, her guidance. So just as King Solomon received the light of Sophia, how he opened his heart to Sophia, and how he was guided by Sophia in his work as the King of Israel, so we can take this as a wonderful example and archetype for each one of us to find a relationship to Sophia in our time, when, as I believe, a new revelation of Sophia is beginning to unfold. So what is the divine plan of creation? This is Sophia herself. If we now focus upon the Sophia revelation that came through King Solomon and which came to expression in the books of wisdom in the Old Testament attributed to Solomon, if we open ourselves to what is conveyed there, we find Sophia herself speaking as the wisdom of the creation. So I'd like to read a few passages from the books of wisdom to bring this to expression. From the book of Proverbs, Sophia, divine wisdom, bears witness to the creation. These are the words of divine Sophia. The Lord created me, the first of his works long ago, before all else that he made. I was formed in earliest times, at the beginning, before the earth itself. I was born when there was yet no ocean, when there were no springs brimming with water. When he set the heavens in place, I was there. When he girdled the ocean with the horizon, when he fixed the canopy of clouds overhead and confined the springs of the deep, then I was at his side each day, his beloved and delight, rejoicing in his presence continually, rejoicing over the whole world, while my delight was in humankind. In these words of divine Sophia, we hear that she was present from the beginning of the creation, that she was active, that she was the divine wisdom at the beginning of time. So we can conceive of the divine creative being, the one who we call the Creator, as having, as the first step in the work of creation, called forth Sophia, divine wisdom, as the plan of creation, so that Sophia is the embodiment of the plan of creation. So what is this plan of creation? Again, in the book of Proverbs, we read the words, "Wisdom has built her house, she has set up her seven pillars." With these words, we find an indication of the plan of existence, that there are seven pillars of creation, seven pillars in the temple of divine Sophia. These we can conceive of as seven stages in the unfolding of creation. And I'd like to speak further about the seven pillars or the seven stages of creation in a later session in these Sophia teachings. When I was in the chapel of Mary as the Lady of All Peoples in Amsterdam, I was touched, moved to the depths of my being, and experienced through Mary the Divine Sophia. We can imagine such an experience in the life of King Solomon, that Solomon was touched and moved by Sophia, not just at one point in his life, but throughout his life, that he had attained a degree of union, of mystical, magical, and Gnostic union with Sophia, that this was present throughout his life. So through the wisdom books attributed to King Solomon, we can learn something about Sophia and about Sophia's teachings at that particular time. We have to remember it was directed to a specific situation, to the children of Israel, at a particular moment in their history. And if we look at the work of Sophia in the unfolding of the history of humanity, we find that her message, her revelation will be different at different points in time according to the people she's addressing. But at that particular moment in time, some 3,000 years ago, it was at this moment in time when the temple was to be built to house the tabernacle and to be a focus for the people of Israel in preparation for the coming of Christ. So, I would like to read a few passages from the wisdom books which can communicate to us something of Sophia's teachings at that time. One quality that Sophia emphasizes over and over again is justice or righteousness. She reveals herself as the teacher of wise men and kings, in these words from the book of Proverbs: I am wisdom, I bestow shrewdness, and show the way to knowledge and discretion. From me come advice and ability, understanding and power are mine. Through me kings hold sway, and governors enact just laws. Through me princes wield authority. From me all rulers on earth derive their rank. Those who love me, I love, and those who search for me will find me. I follow the course of justice and keep to the path of equity. I endow with riches those who love me. So Sophia reveals herself here as one who upholds justice and righteousness. We could say that this implies a balance and a path of walking in the light of the divine, that Sophia continually urges and calls us to follow truth and to fulfill justice. To give a modern-day example, we could think of Martin Luther King, who gave his life for justice, who followed the path of nonviolence, who offered up his life to help the cause of justice. I think we could look upon Martin Luther King as one who was guided by divine wisdom, who was guided by Sufia. And of course, there are many other examples. We could think of Gandhi in India, who upheld the path of justice, the path of righteousness. So divine Sufia works as an inspirer of all human beings who seek to fulfill that which is just and righteous. And this is one of the most important qualities and characteristics that comes through in the Sufia teachings as revealed by King Solomon. But there are other qualities as well. In the following passage from the Book of Wisdom, we hear of the magnificence of Sufia's being, of the various qualities which she radiates out, of her power and intelligence, which she is able to bestow upon us when we turn towards her. So these are the words from the Book of Wisdom. In Sufia there is a spirit intelligent and holy, unique in its kind, yet made up of many parts, subtle, free-moving, lucid, spotless, clear, neither harmed nor harming, loving what is good, eager, unhampered, beneficent, kindly towards all mortals, steadfast, unerring, untouched by care, all-powerful, all-surveying, and permeating every intelligent, pure, and most subtle spirit. For wisdom moves more easily than motion itself. She is so pure, she pervades and permeates all things. Like a fine mist, she rises from the power of God, a clear effluence from the glory of the Almighty, so nothing defiled can enter into her by stealth. She is the radiance that streams from everlasting light, the flawless mirror of the active power of God, and the image of His goodness. She is but one, yet can do all things, herself unchanging. She makes all things new. Age after age, she enters into holy souls and makes them friends of God and prophets. So here, Sufia reveals the qualities and characteristics of her own being, which she is able to share with those who seek her, as is described here, from age to age. She enters into holy souls. From age to age, she enters into all those who seek her. She endows us with the wealth of her gifts, her radiance, her intelligence, her love for beauty, her powers of understanding. These are all qualities which holy human beings down through the ages have manifested and which are a testimony to the presence and the power of Sufia as active and guiding in the unfolding of humanity's evolution. So when we think of the great teachers of humanity, we think of the enlightened ones, we can think of Buddha in India, of Zarathustra in Persia, of Moses in Egypt, of Hermes in Egypt. We can think of individuals who were guided, moved, inspired, filled by Divine Sophia. So these are the great teachers of humanity. Every great teacher is one who has been filled and touched, moved by Divine Sophia, who has contributed something of an aspect of the being of Divine Sophia in helping to bring humanity forwards a further step. So, in the case of King Solomon, we have one who manifested to a very high degree the union with Sophia, the mystical, Gnostic, magical union with Divine Sophia, and from whom we can learn in the books of wisdom about the inspiration and the majesty and glory of Divine Sophia. If we follow Solomon's example, we can see that Sophia is a divine being who can speak to us of the mystery of existence, of the wonder and glory of God's creation, of all that radiates from every aspect of the creation, and who opens up to us the mysteries of the seasons, the mysteries of the relationships between the earth and the cosmos, the mysteries of the plant kingdom, the healing properties of plants, the mysteries of the animal kingdom, what is the true relationship between humanity and the animal kingdom, and of course the relationship also to the mineral kingdom. What do the different precious stones, what are their properties, what do they convey to us, what are their healing powers? All of this is a gift of Divine Sophia to humanity. And of course, the mysteries of human relationships is also a domain which Divine Sophia can bring her light of understanding to bear upon. And so in our time, we have increasing need for the help and guidance of Divine Sophia. Modern science and technology has opened up the information superhighway. This possibility of bringing all human knowledge to us through the computer, through the internet. But what does this really signify? It signifies, on the one hand, an enormous potential to have at our fingertips access to all human knowledge. At the same time, it conveys to us an enormous danger if we were to remain content with human knowledge as opposed to divine knowledge. So, in this extraordinary development of the information superhighway, we can see also a profound danger if this becomes substituted for divine wisdom. There is the task for each and every one of us to open up and develop our faculties, our potential, through spiritual work, through prayer, through meditation. And it is not a question simply of imbibing more and more knowledge, but of opening our hearts and minds to the divine. And this is something that goes beyond access to human knowledge. So I see an enormous challenge here, that there is the danger that the opening up to all access to human knowledge can actually work to create a barrier to the opening up to divine wisdom. And it is especially at this present moment in time, when divine wisdom is beginning to draw closer and closer to humanity, that this challenge is coming about. I shall go into this further in the subsequent sessions of these Sophia teachings. And so we can contrast human knowledge with divine wisdom. divine wisdom goes beyond human knowledge. Divine wisdom has the potential to illumine our minds, to warm our hearts, to strengthen our will, and to make us truly human beings. Whereas the acquisition of more and more knowledge will not do this. It can make us clever, intelligent, but it will not in itself open up our true humanity. And this is what divine wisdom is concerned with, that we become more and more truly human, that we unfold our full potential as human beings. And these qualities that I referred to earlier in reading from the Book of Wisdom, these are the qualities that Divine Sophia is able to bestow upon us. So in opening up to Sophia, we open up our own souls, we enter on a path of self-transformation to become better human beings, to become more worthy human beings, to become servants of the good, the true, and the beautiful, to become more radiant human beings. This is what Divine Sophia really is calling us towards. And in King Solomon we see an archetype, a human being who truly did open himself to Sophia and who was able to accomplish great works through Sophia. Solomon, of course, was not the only human being. I've already referred to others. And in the whole tradition of Israel, we can sense something of the flowing in of the being of Divine Sophia in the quality of motherhood that was striven for by the women of Israel. This was a true sense for the values of family, for motherhood, for being a bearer of wisdom, so that the work of Sophia continued to pour down through the history of Israel, eventually finding a certain culmination in the birth of the Virgin Mary, who represents a fulfillment of this impulse of perfect motherhood. To bring out something of Sophia's role as the teacher of motherhood and of womanhood, I would like to refer to the story of Demeter and Persephone. Demeter, the Earth Mother, the Greek goddess of fertility and the harvest, Demeter, who was worshipped in ancient Greece as the Earth Mother. The word Demeter means simply Earth Mother. Now, Demeter had a daughter, Persephone, who was extremely beautiful. And one day Persephone was, together with her maidservants, going for a walk in the fields, picking flowers. And all of a sudden, the earth opened up, and the god of the underworld, Hades or Pluto, appeared and carried off Persephone into the underworld. All of this is part of a profound teaching which we'll go into later on. Demeter, when she learned of the disappearance of her daughter, became filled with grief and set about to find out where was her daughter. Here we see the quality of love of a mother for her child. This is another quality that is truly Sophianic, coming through the inspiration of Divine Sophia. Demeter, moved by this deep and profound love for her daughter, searched and searched, asked all over, where was Persephone? in her quest, she dressed up as an old woman, came eventually to the home of the king of Eloises. She was invited into this home to become a nanny for the son of King Eloises. Here we see again a mystery connected with the divine feminine, that which we could call the mystery of education, of preparation, of helping the human being from the moment of birth onwards. For what did Demeter do? She took the child. Each night she held this child in the fire, in the flames, in order to bestow immortality on the child. In this we can see something of the goal of divine wisdom, which is that human beings shall become eventually immortal. Demeter, as the regent of all life here on earth, was able to pour out the fire of divine life into the limbs of this child. But one night, the queen of Eloises came down and saw Demeter holding the baby in the flames and was frightened. And at this moment then, the work of Demeter in creating immortality was interrupted. The story goes further, how eventually Demeter decided that she would no longer bring forth the harvest, that famine would reign on earth. And it was at this moment that Zeus intervened, sent down Hermes, the messenger of the gods, to plead with Hades, the lord of the underworld, that Persephone could be released. At this moment then, when Hades agreed, he gave a pomegranate to Persephone. She ate of the pomegranate and thus took in the seed of the underworld into herself. And through this, she was unable to be released from the underworld completely. So she had to spend part of the year with Hades in the underworld. And for the rest of the year, she could be reunited with her mother, Demeter, in the upper world. This story of Demeter and Persephone has many different levels of interpretation. On one level, Persephone represents the human soul who falls from the divine world through incarnating upon the earth, who becomes lost in the realm of darkness, and who has to be found again. And Demeter, the mother, as a representative of an aspect of the divine Sophia, calls to the human soul to lead the human soul back up from the kingdom of darkness into the light of the world of spirit. This is one interpretation of this story, which we can see is a powerful and wonderful story because it communicates to us the love of Sophia as the mother of all humanity, for each and every human soul. So any human being who finds themselves in darkness, in distress, can turn to the Divine Mother, to Sophia, as one who is longing to lead us back into the light, to bestow on us the light and warmth of our spiritual inheritance of our divine origin. So this is one level of interpretation of the story of Demeter and Persephone as a great myth of the divine Sophia, of the divine feminine. Another level of interpretation is that Demeter is the divine mother of everything living, that she is the being of the whole Mother Earth, that she is this Mother Earth. She is a living being whose breath we can experience in the wind, whose circulation of blood we can experience in the movement of the streams into the lakes, of the lakes into the rivers, and the rivers into the sea, into the ocean. So this great, majestic, living being, the Earth Mother, is one who is in a state of sorrow and who needs help, but who is able to bestow upon humanity immortality if we find the right relationship to her. And how does she do this? She is the queen of all life here on earth, and all living beings turn to her. The source of her radiant life is to be found in the center of the earth, so that all plants, all trees grow down towards this center of the earth. Here, if we look at the ancient mystery teachings of the Divine Feminine, in the center of the earth there is the golden realm, the golden kingdom of the Divine Mother. This is the kingdom spoken of in the East as Shambhala, the lost paradise, that with the fall sank down into the center of the earth, is there as a golden globe. And so in the story of Demeter and Persephone, we can see that the Divine Feminine is related also to the center of the earth. Persephone, as the daughter of Demeter, actually in this context as an aspect of Demeter herself, descends into the depths, but there radiates out a power of life which we can attune to, which we can take into ourselves. And this is one of the mysteries known to the great teachers of humanity, that it is possible to become regenerated, to find new life through establishing a relationship with the Earth Mother and with the heart of her being in the center of the earth, that here lie the secrets of immortality. So what we can understand by the mysteries of the Divine Feminine as represented in the story of Demeter and Persephone have to do with profound secrets of human evolution, such as the acquisition of immortality. What exactly we can understand by this, I shall go into later on. In the story of Demeter and Persephone, we find this wonderful outpouring of divine love for the human soul and of motherly love. The culmination of this in the human realm we find in the relationship of the Virgin Mary to her son Jesus. And to contemplate this, we enter into what I spoke of already, the guidance of the Divine Sophia in the history of Israel to produce the perfect human being. Thinking again back to the story of Demeter, who was trying to bestow immortality upon the child, we find in the life of the Virgin Mary and giving birth and being the mother to Jesus, one who did attain immortality through the resurrection. So what was present in the Greek myth of Demeter, we find became actually realized in the life of Christ, and that the Virgin Mary was the one who fulfilled the role of Divine Sophia towards Christ. This will bring out a whole new aspect of the Sophia teachings, that is, the mystery of the resurrection as the ultimate goal of humanity, as the highest stage of evolution, the highest goal and aim of the spiritual path of evolution of humanity. This was lived through by Jesus Christ 2,000 years ago and stands there as the sign for that which Demeter wished to bestow upon humanity as the gift of immortality. Translated into the Christian religion, this means the attainment of resurrection. So we have now looked at the example of King Solomon as an archetypal seeker of divine wisdom, of the divine feminine. And we've started to look now a little bit at the unfolding of the work of Sophia in the course of evolution. So we could ask the question, what was Sophia's role in the ancient world? Sophia, as divine wisdom, established in various religions, in various spiritual teachings, her mystery centers in the ancient world. We can think of the mystery center established at Eleusis for the mysteries of Demeter and Persephone as one example. In this example, there were definite rites of initiation, all of which were inspired by the divine Sophia through this archetype of Demeter and Persephone. So we can speak of a Sophia mystery center at Eleusis, a mystery center which was a source of inspiration for the Greeks and indeed for other people as well, those who came from far and wide to experience something of these mysteries. And we find in ancient writings references to those who partook of these mysteries that this was the most sublime experience of their lives. Of course, they were forbidden to speak about the actual content of these mysteries, but something of these mysteries we know. One great culminating experience in the mysteries of Demeter at Eleusis was the experience of the emergence of the goddess holding a child. This was, we could think of, a prophetic announcement of that which later came to be fulfilled through the Virgin Mary with the child Jesus. This was a prophetic announcement of the one who would attain immortality through the resurrection. The mystery center of Demeter at Eleusis is one example. I could also refer to the great mystery center of Artemis at Ephesus. Artemis, who represents, again, an aspect of the divine Sophia, was worshipped in the great temple at Ephesus. There was a great cult statue of Artemis in the temple at Ephesus, and human beings came from far and wide to be initiated into the mysteries of Artemis. This was an extraordinary temple, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, again built through the inspiration of divine wisdom. And if we were to ask what was the content of the initiation at Ephesus, it was that those who entered the temple, who had prepared themselves, approached the statue of Artemis, and through a process of inner identification with Artemis, they became lifted out of themselves into an experience of the cosmos and the mysteries of the cosmos, they began to experience another dimension, another level of existence, and to hear the sounds of the cosmos, what can be called the harmonies of the spheres. Amongst others, Alexander the Great was one who was initiated in the temple at Ephesus, but also many of the great Greek philosophers were initiated there and also at Eleusis. In talking about the mystery centers of the Divine Feminine in the ancient world, we can also think of the many mystery centers in Egypt dedicated to Isis. The goddess Isis represents another aspect of the Divine Feminine, one that was the central mystery in the Egyptian religion. Isis manifested to the Egyptians as the being who we now call Sophia. Isis, who brought with her the laws of guidance for the Egyptian people, who bestowed upon those who sought her the will to do the good and to serve the divine. So Isis was a great being of inspiration and love, who the priests in the Egyptian mystery centers turned towards in their guidance of the Egyptian people. Many of the magnificent temples in ancient Egypt were built as monuments to Isis as an expression of her divine wisdom, such as we find also in other temples in antiquity, such as the temple of Artemis at Ephesus and also the temple of Solomon. All of these great works were part of the unfolding of the mysteries of the Divine Feminine in antiquity. And if we look at our present world, we see how this is impoverished through lack of turning to the Divine Feminine. So part of the great threshold which humanity stands at as we approach the year 2000 is this threshold of turning back to the Divine Feminine, that the Divine Feminine can become central, can become again a new power of inspiration, such as Isis was for the Egyptians, Artemis for the people of antiquity, Demeter for the Greeks, that the Divine Feminine can more and more become a shaping influence for civilization as we unfold into the future. So I believe we stand now at a great threshold with the year 2000, that we're entering into a new era of time when Sophia is calling to become more and more part of our lives, of our existence. And this is the deeper meaning and significance of occupying ourselves now with the Sophia teachings. So this is a very important threshold, one that bears with it many challenges. And of course, there are forces at work in the world to hinder this unfolding of the Divine Feminine. And this we'll go into later on. So it is my hope that this exposition of teachings of Divine Sophia can be a help to everyone who is seeking for a new way of relating to life, a new and fuller path, a new and fuller experience of our relationship to the world, of our relationship to our fellow human beings. I believe the Sophia can become increasingly a guide and continuing source of inspiration for all that we seek to do in our lives. And for every problem that we have in our lives, every question of destiny, we can turn to Sophia as a source of guidance and help and inner strength.